This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island. From the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you.
Welcome to the People Speak radio show. I'm your host, Elizabeth Valencia. The People Speak normally airs every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific and 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the BBS radio network. You can participate during the show with call-in questions for our guests toll-free in the U.S. and Canada by calling 1-888-429-5471. This is a special show tonight with our guest, Reina Grande. And it took us a little while to get connected, but I'm glad we're finally connected because we have some people who have been anticipating this interview. And let me go ahead and introduce our guest. Reina Grande is an award-winning novelist and memoirist. She's received an American Book Award, the El Premio Aztlán Literary Award, and the International Latino Book Award. In 2012, she was a finalist for the prestigious National Book Critics Circle Awards, and in 2015, she was honored with a Luis Leal Award for Distinction in Chicano Latino Literature. Her works have been published internationally in Norway, South Korea, and Mexico. She was born in Iguala, Guerrero, Mexico, where 43 college students disappeared in 2014. Reina was 2 years old when her father left for the U.S. to find work. Her mother followed her father north 2 years later, leaving Reina and her siblings behind in Mexico. In 1985, when Reina was going on 10, she left Iguala to make her own journey north, and she entered the U.S. as an undocumented immigrant and later went on to become the first person in her family to graduate from college. She's an award-winning author, and her eye-opening memoir is about life before and after illegally immigrating from Mexico to the United States. And it was my pleasure to read your book and to have you on our show, Reina. Welcome.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, no, I was reading your book, and, you know, I knew that I would be connected to it because I'm a Mexican-American with my own border crossing story, but not like that. And I know that from reading it, I know what your life was like growing up, but let's share with our audience what your life was like growing up and some of the pieces that you think are important for people to know as they're listening to the show today.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, as an immigrant, I share experiences with all immigrants. I would say my experience in particular mirrors the experiences of the Dreamers, who are the young immigrants living here in this country. I had the misfortune of having to lose my father and then my mother when they both immigrated to the U.S., and it was a very traumatic experience for me to not have parents as I was growing up and to not know if I would ever see them again. And just growing up afraid of not having a home again and not having a family and being forgotten by my parents or replaced. So these are just some traumas that I feel, you know, even to this day, I'm still kind of dealing from the wounds of that experience. And both of my parents were here working, and my siblings and I were in Mexico living with relatives, just waiting for them to come back and dreaming of the day, you know, when that would happen. And eventually that they did come when my father came back to Mexico when I was almost 10. And he decided to bring me and my siblings back to the U.S. with him. And we had to sneak across the border because we didn't have papers to come here. And we did. After three attempts, we finally made it to the U.S. And we began a new life at my father's house. But it's, you know, it's just been a lot of struggle, many borders that I've had to cross to get to where I am today. But I think for me, what's important is just to continue to honor the sacrifices that were made, and especially, you know, all the things that happened to my family. I want to honor the heartbreak and the trauma and the sacrifices. And for me to do that, I just keep working hard and trying to do my best here and to give my best to this country.
Thank you, Reina. And there's a part in your book where you actually shared that this is really what comes out of immigration, the splitting up of families. This is what immigration does. And it was just so raw getting it from your story where you had, you know, your feet, you know, your life in Mexico, again, with the traumas you're sharing of not having your parents with you, and then coming into the United States and still reliving that trauma. And so I think that is just so important that we continue to have these conversations about what immigration really does. In talking about how you're still dealing with these wounds, it's something that I was very curious as I finished your book. How does the trauma of that separation from your parents and never really regaining them back, except, you know, later on in your life, how does that still leave a footprint in your life?
Well, I think for me, there's always going to be something missing. So I feel that for the rest of my life, I'm just going to have this hole in my heart, because there's still that little girl inside of me that longs for my parents. And the sad reality was that, you know, even though my parents did come back eventually and we were reunited, they had changed a lot, and I had changed. So our family just wasn't the same anymore, and we were not able to recover from that separation. And in many ways, you know, my parents were strangers to me, and I was a stranger too for them. So we didn't really do a good job of healing those wounds, of overcoming the separation. And I think that was something that some immigrant families are able to do a better job than we did at trying to recover and to pick up the pieces. But definitely my family did not do that. We didn't succeed. So to this day, I still don't have a great relationship with my mother, for example. And my father passed away 6 years ago, and he was still a stranger to me when he died. And then now that I'm a mother, you know, I kind of struggle with that too, because now as a parent myself, I kind of struggle with the trauma of what I went through, because now with my children, you know, sometimes it manifests itself in that I try to do what my parents didn't do. I try to be a better parent sometimes, but then there are moments when I feel that I don't understand my kids sometimes, or that I don't have a lot in common with my children. And I try to do my best as I'm raising them. But I definitely do see that sometimes there's a distance between us, because their childhoods are so much different than mine. But I think for me, like, that's important, you know, to give them something better, to give them a less traumatic childhood, to give them just to give them some stability and a loving home, which is something that I feel that I didn't really have as I was growing up.
You know, as a mother, I have two boys who went through the immigration process. I'm very touched by those words that even though your memoir is about the distance between you and your parents, you still see that distance between you and your children who are having a totally different upbringing as a result of just, you know, the ability to have just a different way of coming into the world. And I see that distance with my children too. Now, my children are of mixed identity, and so they're going to have their own issues to battle with, of course. But there's one thing I tell them, you won't understand what immigration is like here in the United States. And in thinking about what's happening with DACA, for example, one thing that has happened very often is that we see the blaming of the parents. And I have so much compassion for the parents who brought their kids here as well. What are your thoughts? What are your feelings in thinking about, you know, DACA youth who are advocating not just for themselves, but for their families and for those who say show compassion to DACA recipients, but this is the parent, you know, their parents' fault for bringing them here like that. What would you say?
Well, I mean, I don't blame the parents for what they did. I would never say it's their fault. I think parents had to do what they had to do to ensure the survival of their children. And I know that it's never an easy choice, you know, to put your children through that experience of being border crossers and risking their lives and bringing them to another country where they're going to be marginalized and excluded. I mean, parents don't want to put their children through that, but they can't leave them behind either, because leaving them behind means leaving them in a war situation. So they made, you know, that very difficult decision to bring their children. And yes, you know, unfortunately, because of our immigration system, they weren't able to go through the proper channels of coming here legally. So they did what they had to do to survive. And now they're here and they're struggling. And, you know, they're constantly being made to feel that they're criminals. I think for me, you know, as a former child immigrant, I feel very deeply for the DACA recipients and for the Dreamers, because I know what it's like to be a child here in the U.S., an immigrant child, and to have to struggle and to constantly have to fight for your right to remain and to be accepted and to find a place where you feel that you belong, and this society is constantly telling you that you don't belong and that you're not enough. That is a very difficult way to grow up, and it just exacerbates the trauma that they already gone through during the process of migration. It also makes it difficult, you know, for them to see that people are supporting them as, you know, children who grew up here in the U.S., and then to see their parents being attacked. You know, that I think for me, it's yet another way to traumatize them and another way to make them feel that they're not accepted. Because how can you tell, you know, the Dreamers, yeah, we want you here, but we don't want your parents, when their parents are such a big part of who they are? So definitely it's inhumane what we're doing. And I also think that, you know, the dreamers right now are in a very difficult place where, of course, they want, you know, some kind of immigration reform. And they want to be given that opportunity. But how can we ask them to turn their backs on their parents? And that's something that I think we're putting them in that place, you know, for them to choose. And I don't think it's right to put them there. So we definitely need to look at a way where we can make the dreamers feel welcome, but also make all immigrant families welcome.
Yeah, that's powerful. And this is The People Speak, and I am Elizabeth Valencia talking to our guest, Reina Grande, award-winning novelist who is sharing with us her journey of her own border crossing, a journey that you can tune into here, and you can also pick up her book, The Distance Between Us. And we already actually have a caller on line one. It's Marta from Massachusetts. Go ahead and give us your first name, your location, and your question or comment for Reina.
No, you got it wrong. I'm sorry. I'm not commenting.
You're listening in. Okay. Well, we'll get back to it and we'll see if anybody decides to call in then. So Reina, in your book, you talk about the beginning of your exploration of your own Mexican roots once you're over here in the United States. And it's on page 246 that I highlighted this part. You said, sometimes teachers and students would think I was Chinese or Filipino or Japanese or Thai. I'd never even heard of those nationalities until I came to this country, and I hated the fact that I was being stripped of my Mexicanness. I would tell people, I'm Mexican from Mexico, but sometimes they wouldn't believe me. I would later find out that Mexico's history includes many immigrants from different places in the world, such as Asia. And this was a source of my features. What has it been like for you to explore the, if I could use the word messiness, of the Mexican identity? And I use that word positively, right? What has it been like?
I think for me, it's really interesting to look back on the history of Mexico and to look at the mestizaje that occurred and how, you know, all of us Mexicans, I mean, we have different bloods in us. You know, we have the indigenous blood, and then there's the European blood, and then there's the African blood from the slaves that the Europeans brought. And then, of course, there were some Asians who migrated to Mexico, like when the Chinese Exclusion Act happened, for example. A lot of Chinese went to live in Mexico. And then there was the Irish that came, and the Germans, and the Polish, and the French, and the Spanish, the Spaniards. So there was this big, beautiful chaos that happened in Mexico with the intermixing. And to me, like, I've learned to take a lot of pride in that, like, just to see how that happened and to try to celebrate it. And I think that's something here that happens here in this country too, except we don't have that kind of beautiful chaos as much, you know, in terms of the intermixing. But we have here in the U.S. people from all over the world who are living here. And I think it would be wonderful if we could all learn to live together, you know, in harmony, and to celebrate each other's cultures, because we all have something to offer here.
You also had a difficult time with your grandmother, and I'm switching this way because I want to make sure to touch upon this. And I laughed a lot and I cried during these parts because I too had a grandmother who passed away that wasn't very nice to me and to my siblings, and who also questioned my mom. And, you know, on page 24 of your book, I'll quote, "I can be sure that my daughter's children are really my grandchildren," Abuela Evila often said to us. "But one can't trust a daughter-in-law. Who knows what your mother did when no one was looking?" This talking about the distrust that your grandmother, your paternal grandmother, had towards your mother. And I think more and more about the situation for women in our own community. I also think to myself that we're sort of in our own journey of finding our own voice. How was that experience of seeing the distrust, through that experience? How was that for you? And how much distrust is there in our Mexican community?
Well, I mean, I really hope that my grandmother's way of thinking is antiquated and that it doesn't exist as much. And I actually have heard from other people who told me that they heard the same thing from their paternal grandmothers back in the day. So I'm hoping that we have moved beyond that. Because, you know, back then with our grandmother, she always made us feel really insecure about who we were by constantly making references that, you know, who knew if my father was really our father, and who knew what my mother was doing, and just that, you know, to me, like, that was always another way to make us feel unwanted. And she was really good at that when we lived with her. Like, the many ways she always made us feel unwanted, and that was one of them, by questioning if we were even her grandchildren. So I want to believe that things have changed in Mexico and in my Mexican culture, and that we have moved to a better place where we are able to have more trust and to value each other and to definitely show more support towards each other.
Yeah. No, I was just really touched by that, and I almost wanted to tell, like, my sister to listen into this radio so that we could begin to explore some of that, because in my family we have a very different experience with our grandparents, and I'd like to explore sometime, you know, why that is the case for, you know, women who had children before they got married. My mom has a child from before her marriage to my dad, you know, just trying to explore what those parts, mm-hmm. you know, bring. What part of you, Reina, is a part that you're continuing to explore right now? You mentioned the trauma and the wounds that remain, but what's something that, through your writing, we're going to get to continue to witness as part of your journey?
I would say that I'm still trying to understand my parents, and that's why I write so much about them. When I wrote The Distance Between Us and my parents became characters in my book, it was really shocking to me to actually have my parents as characters in a book I was writing, because I had always looked at them through the eyes of the daughter that they left behind. And with that came a lot of resentment and anger and a lot of pain. But when they became characters in my book, I had to look at them from a writer's eyes. And I was more compassionate towards them because I am very compassionate to my characters when I write. It allowed me a chance to really get to know my parents in a different way because as a writer, you know, I had to do research on my characters. So I did a lot of research on my parents, on who they were, who they are, how they grew up, who they were raised by, and that time and place in which they came of age. And all of those things helped me to understand my parents in a way that I had never understood them before. So writing about them gave me the chance to get to know them and to try to understand them. And I just finished the sequel to The Distance Between Us. So I have written another book where my parents are characters again. And again, you know, I'm still working towards that deep understanding and that forgiveness that I really want to arrive at. Because I feel that once I fully understand and forgive, I will be able to heal from that experience. And that's what my writing allows me to do, to work towards healing. So that's still something that I am exploring, you know, my relationship with these two people who impacted me so much. And I feel that the more I work on understanding my parents, the more it's going to help me as a parent myself to hopefully be a better parent to my children and to be able to teach my children how to be good parents as well. I definitely don't want my children to inherit my traumas, although I do think that there is an inheritance of trauma that gets passed on from generation to generation. But I feel that if I could work on myself and on that healing, that then I will be able to not pass on that trauma to my children.
You're listening to The People Speak. I'm your host, Elizabeth Valencia, and we'll be right back with our guest, Reina Grande, and any audience questions after this message break.
Hi, I'm Richard Valzer. This is the great BBS Radio.
You're listening to BBS Radio. If it's not mainstream, it's on bbsradio.com.
With over 150 million registered users, Pal Talk is the largest video chat community in the world, with over 300 Pal Talk support staff speaking dozens of languages to help you enjoy your online experience. Meet new people across town or country or continent while chatting about your interests. Sing live karaoke, listen to music, join a lively political debate, or play group trivia in one of thousands of chat rooms in various categories from your PC, mobile, or tablet device. Joining Pal Talk is free and easy. Go to paltalk.com and become part of our friendly community today.
This land is your land.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact our world and make a difference. That's The People Speak every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you and me.
Welcome back. Reina, throughout your book, I was captivated by the way that El Otro Lado was referenced. and the thoughts of El Otro Lado, the other side, meaning the United States. And there's a part on page 45 where you said, back then, I could never have imagined that one day I would speak English better than I spoke my native tongue. And in that part, I took note of something your tía, your aunt, had said when describing El Otro Lado. And she had said, El Otro Lado is a beautiful place. Every street is paved with concrete. You don't see any dirt roads there. No mosquitoes sucking the blood out of you. And I think to myself that till this day, I hear this, that, you know, even in my family who's over here in the United States now and has been here for a while, you know, El Otro Lado is still way better, you know, in their words, than Mexico, our homeland. So one of our callers, or one of the people asking a question right now, is Cristina Rivera, and she wants to ask you specifically about your experience in keeping our culture alive for the next generation, especially for the children that we have now who are of mixed race and cultural identities.
Yeah, well, for me, I think I have gone through some changes in my life where when I got here, as I was coming of age here, a lot of times I felt ashamed of being from Mexico, you know, of my Mexican culture, and I wanted to blend in the way I would say as teenagers, you know, we all want to fit in. We all want to belong. And so there was a rejection of my culture because I felt that that's how it's going to belong. And I remember my sister and I were always trying like creams that would lighten our brown skin, and we would dye our hair brown and do all these things to ourselves to try to fit in. But then, you know, when I went to college, I actually started making my way back to my culture and taking a lot of pride in it because I realized that that was who I was. You know, I had become two people. There was the Mexican Reina and there was the American Reina. And I was now bilingual and bicultural and binational. And I wanted to take pride in that, in the fact that I belong to two different cultures. And so I went from feeling like an outcast in both cultures to now trying to take pride in the fact that I belong to both and that I could rotate in and out of both cultures at will. So that was a transformation for me as I was going through college, learning this, how to take pride. Now, you know, as a parent of children who were born in the U.S. and who are more American than Mexican, that is a struggle. I think all of us parents who have children, you know, who are first generation here, we struggle with those changes. But I have really tried to keep in mind, you know, that my children's experiences are different from mine. And I don't make them feel ashamed of who they are. You know, I try to be respectful of their experiences. And I know that they can never be completely Mexican, you know. They can, and I cannot expect them to be. And I cannot also force them to pick one culture over another because that is not their experience. So I want to teach them instead to celebrate that they have this really wonderful, this wonderful fortune of being bicultural. And I want them to celebrate both of their cultures. I want them to take pride in it and strength from it and to feel empowered by it. And I think that when you're bicultural, it really allows you to feel more as a global citizen, because when you're able to leave one culture and enter another and then go back into another culture, like by being able to do that, to step outside of your culture, it gives you a different understanding, I think, of the world. And at least in my experience, you know, as somebody who is bicultural, it has given me a very different understanding of the world and my place in the world. And to know that, you know, this place is much, much bigger than just Mexico or bigger than the U.S. And I feel like a global citizen, and I feel connected to people from all over the world. And I think that that's because of being bicultural has allowed me to do that, you know, to be able to step outside, to think deeply and critically about each culture I belong to be able to look at what's working and also be able to criticize when things are not working within that culture. So anyway, all that to say that I'm really happy about being bicultural and being bilingual.
That's a lovely answer. I struggle with that too, because my children are half Mexican, part Palestinian, and then they have their white bits in there. And it's hard. And it's been hard because I moved away from my parents in California, and my kids only have a bit of an understanding of Espanol, Spanish. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they've gotten the questions that we, you know, that we have heard many times. So why don't your kids speak Spanish? You know, they should be learning, or they're not Mexican enough. And they're dealing with that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's really a shame, you know, how we're always trying to make people feel that they're not enough. And to me, it's like, you know, it's not that you're not enough. It's that you're more than enough, because you're bilingual and bicultural and have all these unique experiences. So I would say, you know, with my children, I know that they struggle with that too, because like my son, he's not fluent in Spanish. And I know that that's a struggle that we have. But my daughter, she's actually now fluent in Spanish. She became fluent because we were very fortunate when we moved last year. We moved to a city that has a Spanish immersion program at the school. Mm-hmm. And we put my daughter in that program, and now she's completely bilingual in Spanish and English. And I really would like to see more of these immersion programs all over the U.S. because we do need to encourage our children to be multilingual, you know. I want to do away with this English-only stuff, because that's just, to me, you know, it's such a shame. The human brain has the capacity to learn so many languages. So why should we only limit it to one? I think we should be encouraging our children to be multilingual, because that is a way to combat racism and discrimination by learning other languages and learning about other cultures. So that is something that I would love to see more of in this country, is to have our children in programs where they can learn other languages.
And I wonder, Reina, if those of us who have been dealing with the border crossing and having English as our dominant language, wonder what journey we have to go through in dealing with our own shame of some of the things we feel we've lost, to then be able to like break free and embrace things like that. Like, you know what? Maybe my kid's Spanish isn't going to be the kind of Spanish I was raised with, but so what? They're still going to go learn it, and it's going to be their version, and it might be late. you know, because I know I spent so much time feeling like I had failed.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, my oldest is 14, my youngest is 10, my oldest, you know, is a freshman in high school. Now he's taking Spanish classes, you know, in high school. And I think to myself, if only I would have tapped into some of this courage years back, where I wouldn't have gotten. I mean, the world is busy. The world is busy and chaotic enough. It's already hard enough to do some of these things. But you know, getting past those barriers and being able to own it and say, I'm gonna take charge of a new way, a different way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I would say, you know, don't be so hard on yourself, because we are fighting against a society that rejects you when you're different, right? So I think children, especially, you know, when they're little and they're vulnerable to that rejection, they want to fit in and blend in with the mainstream and with what's popular. So I think you and I are fighting a battle, and we are going to be fighting it, but we're not the only ones, and we just do the best we can, and hopefully, you know, we're able to teach our children to love who they are and to take pride in who they are, and they're going to become adults that hopefully will also teach their children that. So that's really all we can do, is to make sure that you know, we love our children, and we help them with their self-esteem and their self-worth, and we protect them from whatever rejections they are going to face in the world.
Reina, do you have, how many children do you have again?
I have two.
And do you have any daughters?
Yeah, I have a daughter, son, daughter.
Mm-hmm. How is it raising her with your experience?
It's bittersweet, you know. Especially with my daughter, it's bittersweet, because as she grows up, I'm constantly comparing her childhood to mine. And I know when she turned 2 years old, I remember looking at her thinking, this is how old I was when my father left. And then when she was 4 and a half, I thought, this is how old I was when my mother left. And as she's, you know, been growing, and she wants me to cuddle her, and she's constantly like hugging me and kissing me and wanting hugs from me. And I think when I was her age, I didn't have a mother to cuddle with. I didn't have a mother to tuck me in at night. And so I think those things, you know, and it hurts. Like, there's that little girl inside of me that still hurts from that. At the same time, I'm really happy to know that my daughter does have a mother to cuddle her, that she does have a mother to, you know, that kisses her, and that is there. So it's painful, and then it fills me with happiness at the same time. And that's kind of how it's been, you know. And now she's 9 and a half, and she's the age I was when I crossed the border. And I look at her and how little she is, and I just cannot imagine my own daughter running across the U.S. border. I cannot picture it. I'm just shocked to think about how my father took me to that border at that age, and how, you know, I went through that experience of having to cross the U.S. border, and and knowing how little I was and not being able to run fast enough. And my father had to carry me on his back. And now I think about my daughter and I wonder, would she survive what I survived? And I don't know that, but I'm really glad that I don't have to know it. I don't need an answer, because fortunately, my daughter will never have to go through what I went through. And that, to me, makes it all worth it.
My border crossing experience was that my dad lost his job before I was born, and he was already in San Diego, and he crossed back to Tijuana. And about 2 years later, they crossed back. So I don't have a recollection of me being in my dad's arms. My mom was already pregnant with my brother, but he's the one who brought me across the border. And that part of your memoir is a part that really humbled me, in thinking that as much as the immigration process has sucked in my life, there are so many other stories that are, you know, harder in their own ways. And so I'm glad, you know, that our children are getting to experience some sort of ease with all the battles they're already going to have to deal with. And I would love, Reina, to actually get a chance to explore more of your story in ways that, you know, as Mexican American women, we can really take a hold of our identity, just like you have. And as you shared in your book, The Distance Between Us. Is there anything, though, before we end, that you'd like to share about you, your life, or anything as we think, as we move forward with what's going on right now politically and the fear that so many people have?
Yeah. Well, first of all, you know, I really hope that as a country, we can come together to do right by our immigrant community. You know, we have to do right by them and support them and honor the history of this country as an immigrant nation. We need to do that. And I hope that we're able to come up with immigration reform that benefits immigrant families. You know, this is not about just the youth or the parents. This is about the whole family. And that is something for me that is really important, you know, that we think about families, and everything that we do or don't do is going to impact these communities, and not just for this generation, but for generations to come. So I want us all to come together and to fight on behalf of our immigrant families and make sure that we welcome them and that we create a country where we celebrate that this country was and continues to be a place where anybody can come here and be able to find a better life and make their dreams a reality. So I think we should all be dreaming together and making this country a better place.
Yeah, and let's begin by welcoming ourselves and our community and celebrating what we're bringing. And Reina, thank you so much. I'm so glad you... Finding you in your book is a part of my own journey, just like you when you found Latino writers. I'm working on my own identity at the moment, and I'm so glad I came across your book. And to everybody listening in, you've been listening to The People Speak with your host, Elizabeth Valencia. I'd like to thank our guest, Reina Grande, and remind you all to visit Reina Grande's website at ReinaGrande.com. That's ReinaGrande, N as in Nancy, D as in dog, E, www.thedistancebetweenus.com. Please pick up her book, The Distance Between Us, and her other books on her website. Thank you, Reina, and thank you to everybody for listening and participating tonight.
Thank you so much. It was wonderful to be here with you speaking.
Thank you, Reina. Good night, everybody.
Thank you. Good night.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the steeple by the relief office, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, redwood forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.